Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining us today from Geneva, Switzerland is Brendan Lemieux. Brendan is the Fiscal Affairs and Anti-Illicit Trade Vice President at JTI. Brendan, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks, Adam. Great to be with you.
So we're going to talk today about whistleblowing solutions. And unlike a lot of companies these days, you have your own in-house whistleblowing system. Why did JTI decide to go that route?
So we started that about 15 years ago, and we were acquired by a Japanese company. And under Japanese law, companies aren't required to have a whistleblower hotline, but it's strongly recommended as best practice. So we set up a hotline that we thought we wanted to be as close as possible to. And what we've done is, while our system is in-house, meaning that we take the complaints or the allegations ourselves, we don't use an external service provider, we do keep control of the investigation by using an internal investigations group for all allegations. So it's a little different than what you see a lot of times today, where a lot of companies will hire and outsource the receipt of the calls, of the allegations that come into a whistleblower hotline. We do that internally, but otherwise what we do, we think, is a little more robust and a little actually closer to the investigations themselves.
So how do you structure the system? Can you give us an overview?
Sure. So essentially what we have is, obviously, whenever there's a concern that arises with an employee, we ask them first to raise it with their line manager or raise it directly with a person who they have the concern about. But as we know, in many circumstances, that just doesn't work. So what we have offered to the employees are really three ways of communicating concerns anonymously, or at least confidentially. So the first way is they can log on to an online portal, which is really just an online form that they fill out, and they can raise their concern there. Again, they can do it anonymously, or they can give their name, and we have promised, of course, confidentiality for anybody who raises a concern. The other way, which is, I think, somewhat unique, is we have about 250 contact persons throughout the company. These are employees who have been specially trained in order to handle concerns and address them when they come in. So that is on offer for everybody, and every local organization has a certain amount of contact people. And then the third way is, of course, just to come directly to corporate compliance themselves and raise that concern. So once you raise a concern, the corporate compliance team will take a look at the concern, and they'll see, does it fit within scope? And what we mean by within scope at JTI is really, does it address a concern of the code of conduct? Does it address a concern of a violation of our policies and procedures? Or does it address a concern of a violation of law? If it's not one of those, if it's just a typical employee solution, you know, for example, somebody's unhappy with their pay, we would not consider that to be in scope. So once we find that it's in scope, the allegation goes to what's called the Business Ethics Committee. And the Business Ethics Committee makes a decision on whether or not to refer the allegation to a full-blown investigation by our internal investigations team. So that's how the first process, the first part of the process is structured. And it's very robust, and there's lots of checks. And really our goal is to make sure that the person who raises the concern has the confidentiality that they want, whether that's anonymity or whether that's just to be confidential. That's up to the reporting employee.
Let me go back on. You mentioned that you have about 250 people who are sort of the contact points for employees to that the calls go to. How do you select them?
First, we just ask for volunteers, and anybody who volunteers goes through a training process where we make sure that they understand what their role is and how they're expected to behave when a complaint comes in. And in that training process, there's lots of materials given. There's one-on-one training. And really, our goal is to make sure that we have the right people. I would say it's very infrequent that somebody who wants to be a contact person is not deemed appropriate. But we have, you know, we have 40,000 employees. So every now and then, there's a situation where we either remove somebody as a contact person or we just don't select them to begin with.
Interesting. So now, and it's great, there's all these different options for people to come forward. What do you do to encourage people to call or email with their concerns?
It's a good question. I mean, you essentially what we do is we have a number of campaigns. Sometimes it's just posters where we put around the local offices, advising them of what the system is and the different options they have. What we decided to do a couple of years ago is rebrand the system. So it's actually called the Your Voice system. And, you know, the idea was to try and get people to understand this is them as employees who want to make the company better. We want to encourage them to speak with their voice, to say what's on their mind, to make any complaints that we should know about as headquarters. And so there's also online videos that we send around to the internal TV system, which we have. So it's really a combination of communication campaigns, emails from senior management, periodically throughout the year, reminding them that this system is there if they ever have any concerns and they want to talk to somebody about these concerns, that there are a number of different options that they can take in order to report.
That's great. Now, once they do report, you mentioned already that there's a bit of a triage system where first you decide, you know, whether or not it really is a compliance or ethics issue or sort of just a run-of-the-mill personnel HR issue. When we were talking about that in when you and I met at the SCCE Academy in Madrid, one of the things that I thought was most interesting was the process of triaging of calls and terming what is most important and the appropriate follow-up. Can you dive down a little bit deeper into that?
Yeah, so what we've seen in speaking with other compliance professionals around the world is there's two different ways of handling the process of who to investigate. In some cases where you have these dial-in, independent, third-party call-in centers, it's great because you have the independence right away. But unfortunately, what we've seen is a lot of these complaints then ultimately get referred back to the line managers or the personnel who should have been dealing with the problem in the first hand. So they're investigating the complaints of their own employees, and there can be all sorts of inconsistencies or potential conflicts of interest in that type of investigation. So what we decided to do is we were going to bring in a very small group of former police officers or other type of quality investigators who will look at each complaint that has been deemed in scope and conduct a full investigation. Now, obviously, there's a big difference between an investigation of an allegation he said, she said, as compared to when we have an allegation of some sort of serious financial fraud. But the idea is to make sure that no matter what it is, it's handled independently so the people conducting the investigation are independent from the allegations. And we found that suits us pretty well because at the end of the day, you do get a report that gets referred to what we call the Business Ethics Committee that I mentioned earlier, which is a series of very senior managers from all different walks of the business who gather around once a week, and we talk about the allegations and the investigations and the report that was generated by this internal investigations group. So it's, you know, it's a lot of work, but we also find that it really does help to get a quality result at the end of the day.
Now, One last question. The hard part with investigations of and follow up on allegations is oftentimes the person making the allegation wants to be kept up to date on what's going on, and that's difficult for a lot of reasons, from privacy issues to you just don't want to be, having this stuff discussed a lot while it's a process. How do you respond when someone raising an allegation or a concern asks that to be informed?
It's a very good question and a very tricky issue. You're absolutely right, particularly here in Europe where we're based in Geneva, Switzerland. And with the data protection rights, and in many cases just the employees' rights, and even further, sometimes just the legal landscape, where you cannot report certain details to another employee. About whoever they've accused. We certainly make a very strong point of ensuring that we get back to the reporting employee after the action is taken. Unfortunately, there are a lot of limitations on what we can tell that employee. So often we're stuck with limiting the response to saying the case was addressed, it was investigated, a report was generated, and there were findings, and certain corrective action was taken. But we are, it's difficult, especially as you've got somebody who's in very good faith come forward and made an allegation, that you can't give them all the details of the investigation and certainly not of the disciplinary action, if any, that took place. But that is the rules with which we must play in, and we follow them as we should. So it sometimes can be unsatisfying to a person making a report, but the one thing we never do is we never just ignore them, or we never forget that they have taken the time and they have done what we asked them to do in order to make the company better. So we always, at the very minimum, make a call to them and explain that something has happened and that disciplinary action was being taken. I must say that on the whole, most employees understand the limitations. So even if they made a report and they don't get the detailed account of what happened and what disciplinary measures were taken, we do find that overall they understand the reasons for that, and they're just happy to know that action was taken, that the complaint was looked into, and that appropriate action, appropriate disciplinary action, if any, was taken. And the details, they tend to be okay with not getting them. But every now and then you do get an unhappy customer who really wants to know what exactly happened.
Yeah, well, I think, one thing that's important is people really do want to know that they've been listened to, and it sounds like you're going a long way towards that. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your experiences with us. I think there's a lot of food for thought here. I want to thank all of you who took the time to listen to the podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we are able to expand your compliance perspective.